agency about 10 years ago from serving a parish in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and started as a counselor. But they said, what we want you to do is develop ways that we can use education to help people deal with their lives. And so we've developed what we call a life education section, and we are seeking ways to help people learn more about how to live their lives. It's been an exciting trip for me for the last 10 years, and feeling that I'm benefiting more than anything I can give to other people in the process. It's been a trip along with something that I think is happening in the culture. And just a word about that, and that is the sense that we have seen the geographical boundaries as the major edge. Good morning. Yeah. There they go. But that was going to be interesting to have that background accompaniment to my comments. But I sense that along with our geographical and technological boundaries that we've been exploring and placing our hope in, it's been like if we can just reach the edge of life, if we can, as we came to this land, if we can settle the land and have enough to eat and enough to take care of ourselves, then our problems will be solved. We will have the new land and a new life. And we're reaching that point in which we've reached the boundaries of this country and have even pushed on beyond into space, have pushed out in terms of our technology. And yet then, with two televisions and three cars and all the CB radio so we can be in touch with the world, we find that we are struggling with our own lives. Struggling with loneliness, depression, divorce, increasing violence in times, crime rates, these kinds of surface things that are the indication that all is not well. And often we find it in those families and those situations who have the most of things. And so again, I think we're looking for the answer and turn again to another frontier. And I sense then a shifting of looking again at ourselves and saying, maybe the problem isn't out there, maybe the problem is in us. And maybe we need to understand more about how we live our lives and who we are and what we're like as persons. And the human potential movement, I think, has been a part of that, exploring, growing edge. Like many new things, it's gone through a fad stage in which all kinds of growth groups and things sprung up. Aha, we found something new. This must be it. I think now we're settling into that stage that is the hard work stage of taking another look. We had a few grand ahas to start with and then some disappointments. It didn't all pan out as well as we thought it was going to. And what I hear now in the circles I move in is people saying we've got to get down to the hard work of working on understanding and working out who we are as persons and really looking three times at these questions. So this, I sense, is the context in which I'm working and in touch with, and I'm sure you're in touch with the world in your ways. In fact, I'm sure that you're coming from many different directions as you come today to a course called Creative Living and whatever that is. I struggle to find titles that might say something about what it is I want to do. I hope this relatively fits what you're expecting. But I also like to work in such a way that we start with where each of us is at. One of the problems I find is that when we begin getting answers before we've done some tuning into our own questions, sometimes the two pass like that and miss. So what I'd like to do right now is pass out some paper, and would each of you just take a sheet? And if some of you have some pencils, here's some more. Had a good job this morning in the sharpening. Any share a pencil? Well, that'll fix that recording. The purpose of the pencil and paper is to just give you a focal point for a few minutes. It helps one focus one's attention. If you don't have a pencil and paper, you can just give this question a thought. But I'd like to have you think about for a few moments and jot down some notes. Let's say that I am able to give you a magic wand. And that magic wand, with that, you can change the way you function as a person or the way you live your life. And I'd like to have you, for a few moments, jot down some things that come to you. What would you change if you had a magic wand and could change the way you function at this point in your life and the way you are living your life? Pencils? Okay. Good catch.
What you said reminds me of what books on psychiatry almost universally say the same thing, that when a psychiatrist consults with a person seeking help, well, the person thinks it's the trouble is various problems outside of himself or herself, and blames circumstances, blames individuals, might even blame husband or wife. But after probing into what is sometimes called the unconscious. Things come to you, and actually the trouble is not outside. It's in the mind and heart of the individual.
I'd like to pause for a moment and give people just a few more moments of silence to deal with their own self. And for those who came in, I've asked the question, if I gave you a magic wand and you could change the way you are functioning as a person or the way you are living your life, what would you do to change? And usually there's some things that come to mind right away, some quick ones, and then look again and look a little more deeply. We'll come back to what you want. Okay, jot down that last thought that you've got. If you have one, just put a word or two that'll help you remember what it is that you were thinking of. Okay, now I'd like to have you take a look at your list and reflect for a moment, what are you aware of happened to you as you try to deal with this question? What did you focus on? What did you think about? Where did your attention go as you raised this question about your life? Look at the list and you know, what kinds of things did you look at? Did you look at the way your body functions? Did you look at the way you think? Did you look at the way you feel? Did you look at the way you make decisions in life? Did you look at the way you act? Did you look at your goals? What do you notice about what it was that you chose to look at? Okay, now I'd like to have you turn just very quickly. Everyone stand up, move your chairs, and move into groups of three. And share what, not necessarily what you decided to change about your life, but what you noticed about the way you approached the question. Okay? Just turn to a couple, three other people, or two other people. Thank you. Okay, I want you just to get in touch with your question and kind of compare notes with the other person. So I know you're not done. You could go on and cover a lot of things, but let's move on for this at this point. Turn around and kind of come back together. What were some of the things that you noticed in your discussion about the ways in which you approached the question?
Similarity.
Okay, similarity between the ways. Could you say a note about what was similar?
Probably work atmosphere and so on.
Okay.
This type of thing is probably stems from kind of refreshing.
Confirms some things. Okay. Yes?
It's like we're all focusing on ourselves. Because it seems like, you know, everything revolves about around us and what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In different fields, of course, but...
Okay, were you seeing that as a positive or a negative? Or...
To me, it's a negative. I think we should... focusing on first on the Lord, and then He will show us how to go out to others. And
okay.
This is a battle forever.
Did my question?
I thought it was specifically asking us what we would be doing though for ourselves, mm-hmm. changing ourselves. Mm-hmm. The specific question was.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so maybe my question helped that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think age has something to do with our approach.
Okay.
As an older person, my approach was not much of a physical sense in changing work or activities, but more in personal relationships and sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think an age group.
That doesn't have, because I have the same thing as personal relationships, and I'm, what, 18. So.
Okay.
We need that in our group back here, too. We were all concerned about, more about our relationships with other people, that we should or could do better with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, I give in.
Yes.
I didn't get a chance to express myself, but this is what I wrote. I wish I had more spiritual insight and power, meaning self-understanding and ability to help others in their problems.
Okay. You tuned right in here, didn't you? Yes, back there.
Maybe we don't have now, if we're not as expressive as we would like to be in popular, and just because we're probably, I mean, the last generation children are seen but not heard. And of course, that does aid me very well, because I grew up in those circumstances in a different locale, not in this part of the country. But anyway, that is a crying need as far as many people are concerned, as far as being more expressive and able to express themselves casually and right away.
Okay, so quite a variety of approaches. My guess would be is that we would focus mainly on the external activities in our lives, our relationship to people, or what it is we are doing with the world in some way. That we are not used to focusing on how we function as a person. And that question is often not raised for us in the church. We talk more about loving in terms of an act rather than what goes on inside of us. Did anyone talk about not wanting to give yourself headaches or not wanting to depress yourself?
How about making waves?
Not wanting to make waves, okay? Yeah. Okay, what I'd like to take a look at is this whole question of how do we deal with how we function. And I put down five ways that are the basic ways we function as a person. Well, one of the problems for us in the way we live our lives is that we block or distort our sensing, that we don't let ourselves let the world in. Jesus talks about having eyes but not seeing, having ears but not hearing, that we shut down our senses and in that way become insensitive to life and the world and others around us. In this way, we also, I've just been in a workshop called EyeSight, capital I dash sight, and one of the things we're dealing with there is people who have glasses. And the question they raise is, what was going on in your life at the point that you developed the need for glasses? And what they're finding is that in many ways, and it's still theoretical at this point, but it seems that there were some things we didn't want to see at the point that we developed the need for glasses. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't some physiological problem, but what caused that physiological problem may have been our desire not to see. So we're beginning to discover that in many ways our incapacities are related to how we think and feel about life, rather than just caused in some mysterious way. So we block our sensing. We don't let ourselves see. Also, we block our knowing. We have a certain way of thinking about life that sets limits on what we will let ourselves know and interpret. And because of that, because of the limits, we fabricate illusions. Gestalt therapy is a therapy that's been developed, and one of the ideas there is that the gestalt is the wholeness of a situation. And gestalt therapy says that what happens is that we try to make things whole when we aren't let our when we won't let ourselves know things the way they are. An example of that, this is both a good capacity that we have to be able to conceive of how things could be, but we can use it against ourselves. Now, an example of how we do that, for instance, if someone's in a bedroom up above here and they dropped one shoe, you may continue to invest energy waiting for the next shoe to drop. What happens is you try to complete that in your mind. You think there is another shoe that is ready to drop, and you almost make the sound happen, or get ready for it, or wait for it. And the problem with that, that need to complete that event, rather than letting it be complete, is that we continue to invest energy in it. If you decide to write a letter to a friend, and don't do it for 3 days. You spend 3 days investing energy, and I should write it, but I haven't. I should write, but I haven't. And we try to complete that in ourselves. Now, what happens then is as we are growing in life, and life doesn't work out the way we want it to, we try to make up for it in our illusions. We try to think of it in a way that it fits for us. And so we create a whole way of thinking and feeling about life that we have to continually invest energy in. In other words, if I, say, had a mother who was very critical of me because I made mistakes, I would have to go on through life trying to work out some way that I can see myself having a significance in life and yet dealing with the fact that I make mistakes. And I could continue to invest energy in the hope that I can make people think that I don't make mistakes and that I can convince myself that I don't make mistakes, if that becomes my illusion. And so I may be very careful about doing anything for fear I will make a mistake, very cautious when I do it. And what I do is I shut down my options in life in order not to make mistakes. And I try to live out that illusion that I won't be okay unless I don't, if I don't make a mistake, I won't be okay if I make a mistake, and therefore I have to make myself believe that I don't. And our whole life, all of us live by a considerable degree of illusion about what life is about and who we are and how we fit into it. And we spend a great deal of our energy trying to make that illusion work. In another language, we call it a script or a life story. We kind of decide how life is going to be for us. We hang on to this. You've heard Jesus say, he who would find life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it. That one baffled me for a long time until I got in touch with how much we are trying to live our own illusion, be our own creators. Find life. Find life is trying to make life be for us, be our own creators, and only when we're ready to give that up, let go of that attempt to be our own creators, do we become free to be who we are and free our energy to live. And we want to talk some more about that. Feelings are the way in which we mobilize our energy. What often happens is we sense something in the world, we give it some meaning, we interpret it, and then we have ways that we learn how to feel. And when I say learn, we have some natural feelings that come spontaneously. I think anger is a natural feeling. It's a very useful feeling. It mobilizes your energy when you need to deal with something that gets in the way. It is not a destructive feeling, necessarily. It is an attempt to work out what gets in the way, and it mobilizes your energy. Now, anger, however, when it becomes unacceptable to us, or when we become afraid, often gets turned into hostility. So anger is not the desire, turns from being the desire to make contact into the desire to destroy when we are threatened. And so hostility then is destructive. Hatred is the stance of destructiveness. But feelings then are a mobilizing of energy, and often as we grow up in life, we get messages about don't be angry, don't be sexual, don't be so flighty, don't be happy, don't be this. And we shut down our feeling systems. So we can either... what do I want here? Block, I guess. I had a better word for that, I think. We create a deadness. Now, the deadness sometimes is the way in which we survive. If I ever let my mother know how angry I was, she'd really let me have it. So the only way I can really make it is to go dead, to act as though I don't have that feeling, and shut down my system. So a lot of times we block our feelings and our feeling energy as a survival means. Or we go the other way and we become hyper. And that is, again, the fear that I'm not going to be able to manage or get what I want or cope with things. And so I throw a temper tantrum. I kind of go totally out of control. And I get hyper. We either go one way or the other, deadness or a hyperness. And neither then is just letting ourselves have the feeling and use it for its value in life. Then our intending. We block tuning in to what it is we want in life because we feel that what it is we want gets us in trouble. Now that's not the same as choosing between wants. It's a feeling I shouldn't want. It's a blocking of our want. Often then, as we block our intending, we end up with confusion. Indecision. Those kinds of uncertainties. Jesus talks about the kind of intending that is when you put your hand to the plow, you don't turn back. The kind of possibility that one can have a clarity of decision making. Then in expressing ourselves, which is our whole way of communicating, we have to find some way to let out who we are. And so all of our acts are those attempts to let out who we are or who we think we are. And we do it with our verbalizing, with the whole way we hold our body. The person who has to charge into life with their chin or is afraid they're going to run into something, so they walk into life this way. They may have to be super strong, so they go into life this way. They may feel they have to be 2 inches taller, so they go this way. Our attitudes towards life affect the way we move our body, the way we use our voice, the way we let ourselves function and express ourselves. And then it moves on out to relationships to people, the way we set up our situations in life. We have to then, by our acting, create for ourselves a setting in which the somebody that we think we are will be able to function. So we choose, out of our fears and anxieties about who we are, we choose our mate in life to fit the somebody we're trying to create. We choose our work to fit the somebody we're trying to create. We train our children to fit the somebody we're trying to create. And in that sense, life cannot be what it was is and was meant to be, it has to be what we want it to be. In that way, I cannot love you, or I can't accept you for who you are. I can't accept the things of the world or the way things are in the world. I have to try to make them fit my own creation, my own illusions about myself and what life is. And so I am not free to love and care about things as they are. So in that sense, I end up acting incongruous with the way things are, destructively. I have to destroy or tear down those things that don't fit or become a threat to me, to my illusions. And I act with a fear of impotence. I am afraid that I won't make it. Now, these are talked about in many different ways by Jesus. What would be some of the opposites of these? Having eyes that do see. Let's see, just sensing what is. Being able to let ourselves let the world in the way it is and accept it, and not have to limit what it is we see and hear and touch. This whole area of touch, for instance, that we've lost touch with in our society. The interpreting then is to know the truth, as Jesus talks about. I will send you a counselor who will help you know the truth, who will help you open up to the way things really are, so that you don't have to try to make things be different than they are. Then in terms of feelings, to let ourselves be alive rather than dead. And I jotted some, jotted some notes. Some of the feelings talked about: joy, peace, love, aliveness, compassion. These are aliveness, but anger also, I believe, is an evidence of aliveness, that it can be a very important part of the way a person functions. Our sexual feelings are an important part of the way we function, and to be able to let ourselves know these feelings and deal with them in a way that they were intended to serve us as a person. And then the clarity of decision, being able to make decisions. This deals with Jesus, as he said, not my will, but thine be done. Since he knew what his purpose was in life, he was clear about what needed to be done, and he was struggling with his will and God's will, and yet the overall sense of purpose, the overall sense of where life was really at for him, and recognizing that it was in doing God's will. So he was able to have a clear decision. Now, the clarity of decision is related to energy. When you wake up in the morning, have you ever laid there feeling, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. Oh, I've got to get out of bed. I don't want to get out of bed. Oh, and I should get out of bed. Oh, I should have gotten out of bed 5 minutes ago. And yet you're laying there, and you don't move. And all of a sudden, something happens. And often it's a decision even out of awareness, but you have finally decided to get out of bed, and you find yourself moving and out of bed, almost being unaware of the actual decision to get up. The indecisiveness of life, again, deadens our energy. When we are able to make decisions, we free ourselves to move. Okay, and then the expressing, kind of the opposites of those, congruity and creativity or constructiveness and impactfulness. That when a person becomes centered, oriented, they can move with a sense of personal power and presence. They don't move with a sense of fear of impotence. That doesn't mean that they may not, this person, you know, can beat someone up, but they do it out of a fear of impotence. They are not truly impactful as a person. They use their power to overpower another person rather than the power of their presence. Okay, what I am getting at here is, how do we understand sin and its cost and its effect? What I have sensed is that the wages of sin is not just death, but the wages of sin is deadness. That we shut down our whole potential capacity as a person as a result of sin. And these people today in the human potential movement are grabbing at some figures, but they're saying, hey, we're only using, say, 15% of our functioning capacity as persons. And so when we talk about being dead and the deadness of sin, my sense of it and Jesus' concern about, hey, you're not living life, you're not really opening up to life, is he trying to say, hey, will you take a look at how you are deadening yourself and not living your full capacity for life? Now, this shift of look, of a way to look at us in life, let me read a verse that I'm sure you've read and skipped over, and you may hear it in a new way at this point. In the 11th chapter of Luke, beginning with the 34th verse, your eye is the lamp of your body. When your eye is sound, your whole body is full of light. But when it is not sound, your body is full of darkness. Therefore, be careful lest the light in you be darkness. If then your whole body is full of light, having no part dark, it will be wholly bright, as when a lamp with its rays gives you light. Now, what is that about? You know, when they drew pictures of saints, what would they do? Halos. And I hear people talking about auras. And I used to think that was an artist's attempt to make it pretty. What we're beginning to talk about now is that a person and their body is a system of energy. And people say they can see auras, and that they can interpret auras. They can tell what's going on in your life by the way your aura looks. Way out stuff. I can't see auras. Maybe it's because I don't believe in them yet. And then we have other things developing where, and they aren't new, but they kind of shake our way of looking at things, something called acupuncture, which says that there's a whole system of energy flow in our bodies, and that you can affect that energy flow by putting needles in. And I thought, well, that's strange stuff. One time I went to a chiropractor, and he had a little electronic acupuncture instrument, and he was working on my foot, and he ran it along, and it felt like there was a little prickly sensation right on the surface of my skin. And then all of a sudden it went zoop. It was as though a needle an inch long was plunged all the way into my bone. And then as he passed over that point, it came back to the surface. He says, that's the acupuncture point. That there are points of energy release. Well, physics now is talking more about the body as energy and understanding it as a system of energy. We're not understanding it yet. We're just beginning. In that a lot of the acupuncture theory doesn't fit some of our common medical theory and the way we have approached the body and understood it. There's another development that's just, you know, being debated and is so new, people have a lot of questions about it, called Kirlian photography. And this is the attempt to take pictures of auras. And I was able to see a number of slides and pictures and a talk on this, and some very strange things happen in those pictures. One is that they find that hands and leaves and other items have some kind of an aura around them that seems to show up on this type of photography. And it changes as things happen to the object. One of the things they show, they call the phantom leaf effect. They take a leaf and they cut off part of it, and then they take a picture, and the whole leaf is still outlined by the light or the energy. So maybe basically, you see, we are a system of energy. And as we understand physics, the part we see is merely the part that is slowed down enough to be seen. Some other things were happening. Olga Worrell is a person who is doing healing in her Methodist church every Thursday, and she has some 300 people weekly coming for these healing sessions. And she has a sense of how she can open up her energy and touch people with her hands. She says she's been doing it since she was a teenager, young teenager, and there is a powerful healing effect. And she believes that it's a faith healing. She is a Christian. And so they were taking some pictures of her hands. And they would take a picture of her in her normal state, and it was kind of a bluish aura outline. And then she would turn on her healing power, and there would be radical change, some glows of reds and oranges, and some lights shooting off her hand in strange ways. See, maybe we have many capacities, and that it is as dynamic as energy. Now, if we begin to shift our thinking from seeing ourselves as kind of a set solid mass of being to a dynamic flowing energy system, then we can begin to appreciate what difference it would make whether we built our life on fear or on faith. Because then those two poles could shape the whole way we function. And so when Jesus talks then about the necessity of having faith, first he said, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. And he seems to be saying repeatedly, there is a lot more to life if you would just open up to it. And then he says, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you could say to the sycamore tree, be rooted up and cast into the sea. And he says to Peter, if you would have faith and weren't so afraid, you could walk on water. And he sends his disciples out, or the 70 out. He says, go out and give peace and move in faith. And they came back and said, what do you know? When we worked in your name, we could heal. We could do things. And then Jesus says, greater works than I do will you do. And so my concern has been, have we only focused on trying to get over some of our problems and have said very little about the potential capacity of life and have spent very little time in our churches trying to open up to what that's about, to deal with that, to deal with the way we build our life on fear rather than faith? Jesus says, fear not, your heavenly Father, it is your heavenly Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom of God. The result of fear, if we were to put an end line down here, is hate. And the result of faith is love. And how we can begin to discover how to let this faith begin to permeate our different aspects of life. One of my concerns here is that faith often for me has been a mind decision to have faith. No one ever talked to me about the fact that I was running around with a tight stomach was evidence of my lack of faith. And the whole question, how do I get my faith down here? How do I begin to discover that peace that passes understanding? So I let my shoulders drop and relax. Let my voice drop down, lower register. See, all these things that are evidence that I am not letting myself truly be centered and open, but tend to tighten and squeeze my whole system or hold it. So my concern is that we in the church have not really heard Jesus weeping over us as he wept over the city, because they do not know the things that make for peace. That he wants to share with us a banquet of life, and we're nibbling at the edges. And so he knocks the door and says, ask and it shall be given, seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. And all kinds of statements like that. If you will but ask me, I will help you to do it. How? How do we move towards that? I believe that the only way we're finally going to move towards that is when we begin to have a fellowship within the church within which we can be who we are. We can dare to let people know us as we are. Because the major problem for us is that we blind ourselves to ourselves. It's very hard for us to know ourselves by ourselves, because we hang on to our system. And so I sense that we need the kind of fellowship where we can help each other become aware of how we can move towards a fuller experience of life. In that sense, that we can confess the ways we are stuck in the different ways we function in life. Confess with each other and not be afraid. Trusting that all of us are there committed to living in faith and to opening up to the possibilities that Christ is inviting us to. So this is what I'm concerned with about creative living. I'd like to deal with different aspects of this as we move on through the next days. Let me stop at this point. Do you have any comments or questions that you'd like to make?
I don't know whether this is applicable here, but many years ago I memorized this verse, and I think it was written by a man with the name Edwin Markham. An enemy I had, whose mean I stoutly strove to know, for hard he dogged my steps wherever I might go. My aims, my plans he balked, my aims he foiled, he blocked my onward way. When for some lofty goal I toiled, he grimly set me nay. Come forth, I said, cried, lay bare thy guise, thy features I would see. But always to my searching eyes he dwelt in mystery. One night I seized and held him fast, from him the veil did draw. I gazed upon his face at last, and lo, myself I saw.
Okay, thank you.
Know the truth, but not abstract or philosophic truth like Pilate sneeringly said, oh, what is truth? It's a person who is the way, the truth, the life, the Lord Jesus Christ. If we don't know him personally, we've missed the bus.
Okay.
I was interested in what you said about faith healing. Is there different religions that are doing more with faith healing than others?
Yes, I think some are focused on that as an aspect of their concern.
I know a woman now who is looking for a church or religion where she can get this faith healing. She's sincere that somewhere there is, and this is what she's doing. She's going from church to church. Evidently, our church hasn't been, our pastor hasn't been able to satisfy her, because she's leaving. She's probably left her. Is there any way you could satisfy a person who is searching?
I'd want to find out what it was she was concerned with.
Well, it's,
in other words, I would guess that
something like rheumatism and arthritis.
Right, okay, and I would want to begin to relate to that and try to understand what that may be about for her in her life.
And even Catherine Kuhlman got ill, very ill, so she went down to Oral Roberts to see what he could do for her. But she didn't get well, she died.
I'm a little interested in you talking about this figure. Said it was something like her power. If she were truly a Christian, it couldn't be any energy from her. I mean, it would have to be from Christ.
I think that's an important question. You know, whether Christ does it in some extra way, or whether Christ opens up our powers to serve the will of God. And I think more the latter, that he was really trying to put us in touch with what are the natural God-given capacities of a human being, and he is the way, and that he's the way in which we become unlocked and open to those. But I don't know that he moves in and does it extra power wise.
Well, don't you really think it's both? I mean, there are in all of us healing powers that most of us are not in touch with, and he can put us in touch with those things. But then I think, by the power of the Holy Spirit acting within a person, there may be a special gift in a sense.
Yes. Fine. I have no problem with that. I certainly see the power of the Spirit working.